Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 105 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make theater happen. You can find all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other fine podcasting streaming services. And if you have a spare 30 seconds, please do rate and review the podcast on whichever platform you use to help us be more discoverable to listeners who haven't heard about us. And now for this week's podcast. Last week, I saw a show that I've seen many, many times, both on screen and on stage. A show that's done in high schools, colleges, universities, amateur musical theater societies, and of course, the many professional productions that are put on around the world annually. Currently, with a production completely in Yiddish, running off Broadway at the moment, have been extended multiple times due to its popularity. It is a show that has made stars of its leading men, including Zira Mostel and Topple. I am, of course, talking about Fiddler on the Roof. Currently running at the Menier Chocolate Factory, Sir Trevor Nunn's production of Fiddler on the night I went definitely left its audience in both stitches and tears. And I know I'm going to sound gushing here, but I really don't care. I'm not going to apologize. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was so refreshing to see a grounded, measured, sober, and thoughtful production of this fantastic show. I couldn't fault the performances, and it is so great to see Judy Kuhn over here on a London stage, people, and to have her in such an intimate setting. It is a fantastic way to see this legendary Broadway actress up close at her amazing best. There are so many players in this musical, and unfortunately, I can't give the proper time that they all deserve. With the ensemble playing numerous characters and showing off their dancing skills, I'm telling you, the bottles on the heads across the stage scene was particularly memorable and pretty incredible. It was just fantastic. And a massive shout out to the five actresses playing Tevye's daughters. They were an absolute joy. The design by Robert Jones, the lighting by Tim Lutkin, the sound by Gregory Clark, with Jonathan Littman and Richard Mauby on costumes and hair and makeup, respectively, they all bring this story to beautiful, beautiful life. And Andy Nyman as Tevye is an absolute force. It is a fantastic performance. And full disclosure, Andy is a personal friend of mine. I've known him for years, and he won't mind me saying this. It's not a towering presence, as some of the actors who have worn the prayer shawl and stepped into Tevye's boots have. He doesn't stomp around the stage at all. But as soon as he steps out, you like this man. He is your friend, and he wants to let you know about his friends and his family and his faith and his businesses and his town. It is a performance that has gained so much praise for its subtlety and reality, and it is one of the most honest and truly heartbreaking performances I have seen in quite some time. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Andy before a show this week to talk about his journey to Anna Tevye, the setting of Fiddler, the importance of the story, and not to just the Jewish population, and also his personal emotional investment into this production. We were also joined by Paul Bogaeff, the Emmy and Grammy Award-winning musical director of Fiddler, who just happened to be walking through the foyer at the Menier when Andy and I sat down. So I think you'll agree that he had some fascinating insights to add about this production. Have a listen. Andy, came to see you last week, and I'm blown away. This is going to be a bit of a gushing thing, but what I just want to talk to you about how important this production of Fiddler on the Roof is, mm-hmm. in the canon of Fiddler on the Roofs. Roofs?
Yeah, roofs.
Fiddlers on the Roof? Yeah. What is the plural of it?
God knows.
Because I found this production to be the most grounded and, the least musical theater version of the show that I have seen either on stage or screen.
Yeah.
And from the beginning, because this is a show that gets put on in
in high schools, in drama school classes, whatever, because it's easy or whatever, it's funny or whatever. This just took it back to the script and the story of people that you know the what's coming, but a man is his daughters are going one by one, and people are losing their home. And it just, from it was grounded from the moment you stepped on stage and into the end. And I wept, openly wept, like ugly cried during Little Bird. But, you know, I can you just take me through, like, the first, maybe the first day of rehearsal or something that where that was the latest?
Well, it goes before that, because it goes back to, you know, I'd known I was doing this from April, really. David contacted me, Bhavani contacted me, and to find out if I was available and would I want to do it. And I was waiting to hear from something else, but I just thought, I've got to move hell or high water to do it. And Trevor wasn't even in the picture then. I think he probably was with David, but it wasn't locked down, you know. And then when I found out it was about 2 or 3 weeks later, Trevor was directing it, and then, you know, I was over the moon. So then that's the first time in my career, really, where that's happened that way around. Mm. So then David, I sort of said, well, we should all go for lunch, A, to celebrate, but also just to talk about this. So we went to a deli. and I reread the script. And it was all very nice and lovely lunch. And then I said to, or Trevor said to me, what do you think the piece is? And I felt quite strongly about it, because I'm emotionally very attached to it, because it is literally my great-grandparents, you know, 1905, fleeing Lithuania and Poland. So they are, it's exactly the period, exactly these people. But I also have an issue with that, because one of the dangers, one of the reasons the show is so massively popular and has been for 50 years is its universality. Mm. It isn't just about being Jewish.
Yeah.
Balanced with, it's the most insightful, brilliant piece of Jewish writing ever. But that's, I get, it bothers me when the show is done from a solely Jewish perspective and very schmaltzily.
Yeah.
It also bothers me when it's done not from a Jewish perspective. It's like, you know, I want it from both sides. But the truth of it was, Trevor said, what do you think the show is? And I said, I just want to strip everything away from it, and it just, I just think it's like, at the risk of sounding a bit wanky, I think it's like King Lear or something. I think it's about a man whose family is being ripped away from
him. Absolutely.
And then everything else just takes care of itself, you know, the immigration, the anti-Semitism, the universality of that story, the way it's still as relevant with, you know, Syria as one of 50 terrible migrant stories, you could quote.
I mean, you know, just throw some darts, you know, at a map.
Exactly.
You know?
So, but fundamentally, that's what it was about. Mm. And I was really nervous of saying that, because, you know, Trevor could well have said, oh, well, I think it's the funniest show that's ever been written. And I think, you know. But he didn't, and he said, that's music to my ears, because that is exactly what I think it is. Mm. And that was very exciting, because it just felt like we were on the same page and trying to do the same thing, which was just to tell the truth of it. And I had a wonderful experience. I was with David Bhavani. We were in New York, and we went to see Sheldon Harnick, who's the only one of the writers who's left alive. He's the lyricist, and he's 94. And we sat with him and chatted, and it was a bit overwhelming, actually, to tell you the truth, you know. But David said to him, what advice, have you got any advice on putting it on? And he said, yeah, don't play it for laughs.
Yeah.
And so again, that was like, we'd already had our conversation about what we thought. And then to hear that, because the history of the show is really interesting. There's a brilliant, brilliant book called Tradition that lists, a really light, fascinating, fun read.
Right.
But, you know, you kick off with Zero Mostel, yeah. who was a giant
yeah.
and a remarkable actor, but yeah. you know, from reading it and from the people who saw him, when he was good, he was incredible.
Yeah.
But when the shtick kicked in,
yeah.
it just became
those are the clips that people see. And yeah. Zero
Mostel. And but again, without his gigantic template
yeah.
and then Topol doing yeah. his remarkable yeah, thing, course. You know, it wouldn't have lasted as long, but nevertheless there's a sort of larger than life quality that goes with it, and the temptation is, because playing Tevye, I mean, it is one of the great roles yeah. really, and the temptation is, in the worst way, to milk it for everything it's worth
yeah.
as opposed to just telling the truth. So it was so exciting to hear Sheldon Harnick say, just don't
play it.
Yeah.
Well, let's dive into that, because yes. you're talking about what's one of the great roles. You're absolutely right. Tevye has one of the great arcs in musical theater. Like,
yes.
Because he has a spiritual relationship.
Yeah.
He's got a family relationship. He has his community relationship. He has relationships everywhere.
Yeah.
And is juggling them. And I think that the audiences, in some capacity, can identify with, if they can't identify with the spiritual relationship with you're talking with God.
Yeah.
If they can't relate with that, they can relate to the spousal relationship.
Yeah.
They can relate to the children. They can relate to the business relationship.
Well, that's what's
strange relationship.
That's what's incredible, because it's so, the writing. I mean, if you took the songs away from this, the thing would survive as a play, as a brilliant play. It just so happens to have some of the greatest musical theatre songs ever written as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
You know. So, but you're absolutely right. I mean, what's so powerful about the show is that if you come as a single person without kids, it's heartbreaking, because it makes you think about your relationship with your parents
yeah.
and leaving home, or upsetting them, or whatever those things are. If you come and sit with someone with little kids, it's heartbreaking, because you think, holy fuck, at some point I'm going to hit that point. If you see them when you are the age that Tevye and Golda are, which are in their mid-50s, when, please God, everything's worked out as it should and your kids are now leaving home and you're going through empty nest, it's agony.
Yeah.
But it's this wonderful... I mean, where it is the show is uniquely Jewish is that bittersweet quality,
yeah.
which is, you know, I mean, the greatest way of encapsulating the sort of the version of the bittersweetness is the sort of joke that is, you know, to encapsulate the history of the Jews, it's, they tried to kill us, they failed, let's eat. and it's sort of perfect.
Oh, great.
You know, and that wry survivalism
yeah.
is so embedded in the show. But that is also the same with Sikh families. Or it's gigantic in Japan
yeah.
and always has been.
Lord, absolutely.
Because you're
yeah.
also looking at how you live without tradition.
Yeah.
Do you know that story
no.
from Japan?
No.
The Tevye, it was a huge hit in Japan.
Yeah.
And the Tevye said, I don't know how this show is successful in the rest of the world because it's so Japanese.
Isn't that amazing? <That's> that.
Oh yeah. My God, brilliant.
Yeah, and that's Paul. I never know how to say your surname. I'm going to be honest. I'm on the record. Bogoev? Bogoev?
Well, it's in America, it's Bogey, but it's in Russia, Bogayev.
Bogayev, that's the way to say
Bogayev.
It.
That's a... Everyone should say it.
Paul Bogayev. Like,
yeah, Bogayev.
Because it's like... there's a character in... I think it's Cherry Orchard, named Gaia.
Right.
And from Kiev. Yeah.
Right.
So it's the same. I have the same thing.
So Paul's our MD and vocal... genius.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
What, this?
Yeah.
I came to see it last Friday, and I came out, I was still in shock, and saw you, and you wonderfully had your family.
Yeah.
Good. Oh, that was a really good
yeah.
it was, audience.
Oh, my Lord, man.
I mean, really good
and
audience.
Knowing, you said you had a lot of people in, and then... a mutual friend, Dave Morrissey, was in,
yeah.
and he said, "Oh, I was sitting amongst Andy's family, and it made me want to cry because I thought, what a beautiful thing to portray in front of your family." And
oh,
it was well, astonishing.
Well, this
astonishing
this is
show.
This is the thing, you know. I can show you. So this photo I'm going to show you now,
yeah.
which you won't see on the podcast.
That's
obviously,
okay.
but you know, describe? Bear in mind. That was my mum.
Yeah.
In the audience. My dad, sadly, is no longer with us. But my mum was there in the audience, and that's my mum's mum.
No.
That is my grandma. These are my great-grandparents who fled 1905. This was taken in 1906 in Leeds. Let's go to it. No.
I want to pinch in. Look at that.
So that's my mum's
mum. I see Preston.
Yeah. So this is, in terms of doing it in front of my family, it's not like a flimsy thing.
Mm.
And aside from, as an actor, the usual weight of responsibility that I always feel, there is a weight of responsibility unique to me that I feel in this, where of not only honouring those people, but literally we're talking my grandma and her parents. I mean, it's a spit away from where we are.
Yeah.
So it was remarkable to do that. And then there's the other complexity with it, which is, were it not for those terrible times when they had the capacity and bravery to flee, we wouldn't be sitting here now chatting about this.
Of course. And 100 years on, more than the 100 years on from when they did it, we're still talking about the persecution. I wanted to ask about how it felt as a cast for you guys to feel the necessity of putting on this show. And I know that there's, I know there's a production in Yiddish,
off Broadway.
And it's doing extremely well. And
very good.
Yes.
I saw it.
How important is it to carry on doing it in this message?
Well, it's so important because it's not like it's an outdated message.
Mm.
And again, I stress, not just because of the anti-Semitism.
Mm.
Sadly, anti-Semitism is so on the rise again, and vocally so. But it's not just about that. You know, it's the same shit. Greedy people wanting land, wanting to eradicate poor people, wanting to kick them out, get rid of them, deny their existence. Mm. So the thing's relevant and always will be relevant. And that's one of the reasons when it's done with schmaltz, it undoes the power of it.
Yeah.
And that's not to say this isn't some miserable, bleak show. You know, it is it's an unbelievably witty script.
Oh, God, it's funny.
Funny.
It's ridiculously funny.
And, act one is so joyous until the last 5 minutes. So joyous. Act two, less joyous.
Yeah.
But the level of truth and integrity in the writing is really extraordinary.
I think you set up with it being witty, with it being with a lightness of touch, that you allow the heartbreak to come in slowly, which is lovely. But you do have little guilty laughs in the second act when you kind of go, oh God, thank God he said something, or thank God he. And I still think I just love the. On the other hand, work so well. I'm going to pull Paul in a minute.
Cool.
But I would like to talk about. I've seen a fair amount of shows at this theater. It's one of my favorite spaces, and it was intrigued to see how you guys were going to put this on here, because I've seen it in all different types of kind of configurations, and I was like, how the hell are you going to put and attempt getting there. How are they going to build that village? And I sat down and was like, oh, I'm in the village.
It's an extraordinary achievement that Rob's done with his design. This is the fourth show I've done at this theatre over the years. And there is an unquantifiable magic about this place.
I agree.
That is just, I've never been in a theatre that's as versatile as this weird little space that somehow always changes. And in truth, that's not to say every single thing I've ever seen here or been in here is sensational. It's not, you know.
I can agree.
But, when things work here, they work in a way that transcends any other theatre that I've ever been to all worked. And some of that is about the proximity to the audience. Something is about... There's a smell in the air of this place that I just... That there's something about the building. But Rob's design of this, I mean, absolutely. And we're talking about the challenge of, you know, Jonathan's brilliant costume work, the design of how you make Anatevka feel as real as it does.
Yep.
And that goes across everything. It feels utterly authentic. But my God, the way it's been designed to the millimeter, you know, my cart literally could not be a millimeter bigger, otherwise it wouldn't fit.
I mean, and how many doors? I couldn't believe the amount of doors that open and close in this set.
I know.
It's insane.
Yeah.
So clever. But I think that's the joy of sitting down and going, oh, I can see everybody. And then I was like, oh, I can see everybody.
Yeah.
And I felt part of. And that's really... gosh, the seeing the spit and feeling the breath at points and feeling the walk when they're... The choreography in the show is insane. And they are twirling... inches away from your face.
Yeah.
It is brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, it is brilliant. And I think the design and the way that it's been brought into the space has been fantastic.
Yeah.
As an actor, as somebody who, like, I want to get technical for, you know, the guys that are listening. You know, how did you approach that, knowing that you were going to be? I mean, you are as close to an audience member as we are sitting on a love seat.
Well, I adore it. I adore it because, to me... The challenge that I think of with every single character, and again, this is not to say I succeeded, but the thing that I always aim to do, even if it's 10 lines in something, or something like this where you're on stage for virtually 3 hours, is to create something that is properly a living, breathing human being. That if somebody sees you in that role, they can't really think of you in any other way, because it feels like, well, that is a person. It doesn't feel like, oh, and again, I'm only using my name because we talk, it doesn't feel like, oh, that's Andy Nyman playing that part. I want people to go away and think that is that person, in the same way that I do with everything. So then I don't really think about proximity to audience, because you hope that your training and experience takes care of all of that, depending on the size of the house. Or there's unique challenges within this, because Tevye talks directly to God, who has to function as, but that was very easy, because literally in one of the interviews with Joe Stein, who's the playwright who wrote the book about that, he just said it's like he always thought of it as someone arguing with their brother, and the second I read that, I was like, oh, okay, well, that's
good
takes
direction.
Care of that. That's a great piece of direction. And then the other thing is genuinely talking to the audience and using the audience as a touching point. But that's also a brilliant device, because in this space, it's not like you're looking out into the darkness and hoping.
Yeah.
I mean, I can literally say to somebody, look at my daughter's eyes.
I know, it's great.
She loves him, you know. And all of that increases the impact of the show, because you know you are literally talking to people, and they know you're talking to them. So then they're on that journey with you. So it all... When you're rehearsing it, it's... I hesitate to use the word scary, but you constantly have to be brave and constantly have to eradicate the fear of failure and the fear of embarrassment. That's the thing, that's the trick, is to always think the worst that happens is I make a twat of myself, and that's fine. If I do, that's fine. Because it's only in doing that, you know, when we were rehearsing in the rooms upstairs, always, you know, when the cast members are sitting around, not in the scenes, and it's those moments, looking at them and talking to them. So you start to get comfy with the idea of talking to and not letting that throw you, you know. So,
Paul, were you in on the beginning, from the beginning of with the music, with the MD?
Well, I I tell you this, I had, whenever Trevor comes over to America, calls me up, and we have these marathon dinners. They're like 5 hours, and talk about everything, and anyway, and I said, you know, what are you doing? And he's, I have two things to say to you. Klezmer and the Chocolate Factory. And I was like, oh, right, Fiddler. And then I told him, I was going to do an ABC Disney TV musical of Fiddler, and we had cast Victor Garber, remember, and we were going to film and record in Hungary or one of the, you know, Eastern European, and it got canceled because of the political thing. And they had already allowed me. I said, I want to do it smaller. I want to do Klezmer. And they were great. So I had that in my mind. So Trevor said, I said, I know they don't bring people over, but I will come over if you do it. He said, well, I think they have some. And then a month later, he said, oh, this, you know, only he can write in his text, God has smiled on us. Whoever isn't doing it, will you make good on this offer? And I said, yeah. And I'm literally staying at his house, otherwise I couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
So as far as the beginning, yeah, but, you know, but when I listened to you talk about it, it was so clear what his vision of this show was.
Yeah.
That, and he's followed through, and it's great. And it is, I want to do it intimate and real. He kept saying, you know, deeper. And I said, great. That's exactly right. And then everything else follows from that. It's easy for me to, you know, if we have to change little orchestrations or anything. And a great guy named Jason Carr did the reduction. But we were very clear from the beginning. Yeah. And I chose the instruments and all that. But it's just easy when you've got somebody who's got this this, you know, idea. And I've seen the show since I saw Paul Lipson do it, who was Zero's understudy. But I saw Zero do the gypsy run through of the revival. So this was with a piano, and him just in a kind of the prayer shawl, little shmata, and of course this is all theater people. He was on his best behavior, and that was, you know, that was memorable. But I've also seen two Broadway revivals that I really had problems with, because it was reinvent and do these kind of things which sometimes works, but I didn't like the Yiddish one.
Yeah.
Is very much the play.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like this, it's not fucked around with.
Yeah,
and,
No, it's, but the music was so simple. Like there was, it allowed, you could hear the lyrics come through. This is reductive is the wrong word. It's not a reduced is as well. But there is a, not even a thinned out. I'm trying
back
to find
to
the
basics.
Wrong.
Okay,
right.
That's a very and, very. But, and Paul works brilliantly with Trevor. And one of the things that, because I am not, you know, I've done. The last musical I did was 3 years ago here. Mm. That was Assassins. Mm. Prior to that, I hadn't done a musical for 22 years.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I'm not a musical. I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but I'm not in the musical theatre world. And you work with actors who are, and they're athletes. It's a very different world. And their ability to sing and their ability. I know, but and there's, it comes with good and bad.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a different acting.
Yeah,
kind
of
thing.
What was amazing was the songs. It worked in literally exactly the way I wanted to work, which was Trevor. Those songs are treated as script.
Yes.
So there's no, you're not even talking about singing anything. You are working on those songs as part of the scene.
Well, that's a big thing, and he's done this for a long time. You don't do that thing where you immerse yourself in the music. You read the lyrics first.
Yeah.
And that's the way I work with people. I'm absolutely an actor, a singer should be able to do a song like a monologue, and without the you know the crutch of having music to give you the stuff.
Yeah, so that was a huge thing, you know, and a brilliant way of starting, because you know, ultimately with musicals, and I'm like you, John, we as a family, that's our biggest expense. We go to the theatre all the time, we see everything. And one of, you know, when you see a musical that works brilliantly, I'm not just talking about the way it's written and directed, but when the performances are brilliant, it's that thing where, I remember Jamie Lloyd saying on Assassins, you can't speak, the emotion is too great, right, and now it takes you to a different thing. But it's the same thing, it's the same drive, it's the same emotion. So to work on it as speech is the bedrock. Mm-hmm. And then I remember very clearly our first day, mm-hmm, you and I, with me sort of saying, you know, okay, well, you know, it's that thing where you think, fuck me, I'm shitting myself. We're going to go work on If I Were a Rich Man. And we went in and we sort of ran through it, and you said to me, and again, this might be like page one musical theatre stuff, but for me, you said, you know, make sure each of those little moments there, that it, each one is a clear thought, and that you're saying something different with Biddy Biddy Bomb.
Right,
I remember it so clearly, and it was like the permission to be free.
And
it was such a huge thing for me then, and that's literally all I needed then to go away and find my way into the piece.
Because that is, I mean, if we're going to talk about a song that screams Fiddler on the Roof, I mean, If I Were Rich Man, people wait for that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's right at the beginning of the show as well. It's just there. And people, that, for me, it's the one thing that, the one song that people expect, oh, it gets a bit hokey and that goes big and it's...
Yeah.
I mean, the way you do it, the way it's been directed, is so awesome. As soon as you did your first, I went, oh, that's fucking genius.
Specific.
It is so genius. I mean, I just went, this is going to be different. do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That can only be a good thing. And it sounds like I'm blowing sunshine, and that's...
No. Well, I'll tell you something. If that song is not done moment to moment, where you're discovering things... It's long and boring.
It is a long... I never really think about it.
Yeah.
But, boy, it is a long song. Yeah.
But it's not. Because you're on the journey. If the actor's on a journey, then you'll go with them.
Yeah.
But it...
But I feel like that's... I feel like... I'm not self-aggrandizing, but I feel like that's true of this production. Because the amazing thing is, Act 1 is an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And the thing we hear again and again and again is people go in and see that and they think, oh, fuck me, an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And they come out and they can't believe, because it just, pew!
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's great, it doesn't feel like that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, speaking of hour and 40 minutes, no. you've got to go for Vogue 1, but I would love to get both of you. I mean, Paul, thank you so much for the blessing that you're here. Can I get what you'd like to people? I will say again, we'll put it in the show notes, and I think people should come and see this to see a true interpretation of this show. But what would you, Andy Nyman, like people to go away with when they come and see this? What would you like to be the kind of the legacy of that production on the audience member?
Oh, I think that's a really hard question to answer.
I know, I'm sorry.
No, I think it's an important question, but it's hard because I don't really need to... everything that I would hope that they would get, they'll get.
Hmm.
Because the show is... I don't mean our production. I mean, the show is so brilliantly written, music and as a play. And the truth of it is, all we've done, it's not got in the way of it. And Trevor is a master of that. And that sounds like a simple thing. It isn't. It's a very hard thing, especially when the legacy of it is you've got to do this, and there's a really big laugh here. Don't mess that up. And there's this thing you could do here, and there's this thing. You know, we've just not got in the way of this unbelievably powerful, funny, touching work of art. So everything you could possibly want an audience to take, we know they take from it, because you see it, you can feel it every night.
That's that's a great answer. Paul, would you like to leave it at that? Would you like to add to it? God,
I don't know. It's just that it's the play is the thing, and I like that. I always, and Trevor is very much that, although he's done some, you know, avant-garde productions. It's not always like traditionalist, but the fact that when you have a piece like this and you honor the play, you know, the as it's written.
Yeah.
And fuck around with it. Which I, as I said, stand. But the fact that people can see this and feel like they're part of Anatevka, that's a big deal. So who knows if this moves. If it does move, I hope it's into a place that is not too big, that it's the same configuration.
I think
I don't think they're going to...
It feels like that's a given, you know. Yeah, if it has a future life, they'll find a way of...
Yeah, yeah. Keeping it, replicating it, keeping it. I'm sure there's
keeping
somewhere.
Keeping the shtetl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much.
Okay.
Thanks, Andy.
Come back.
Yes. Very good.
Andy Nyman and Paul Bogaev from the Many a Chocolate Factory's production of Fiddler on the Roof. Now, before we wrap up, if you're a theater professional, head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free profile page. All you have to do is create an account with an email address, make up a cool password, and away you go. Start building your profile page, get some credits on there, and start connecting to the industry. You can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, at Curtain Call. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast, get in touch with us via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me personally at john@curtaincallonline.com. It just leaves me to say a huge thank you to Andy Nyman, Paul Bogaev, and the entire company of Fiddler on the Roof at the Many a Chocolate Factory. Do yourself the biggest of favors. Get tickets if you can. I mean, it's pretty much sold out, but you can check on a daily basis as they release production tickets a day or so in advance. It runs at the Chocolate Factory until the 9th of March 2019. And who knows? Maybe a transfer is on the cards. Who knows? God knows. The Chocolate Factory have had a few of those in their past. But just go see it if you can there. It is truly magical. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast. And I will catch you all next week with a special Christmas edition. Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.